Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And the podcast about rugby that is there for you 52 weeks of the year, every single Monday, for very nearly 10 years. And we're back here again. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Tim, that's JB.
Hello, Tim.
Live in the rugby dungeon with me. In the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container again.
Yeah.
Because he is...
lazy.
Lazy and by proxy saving lives, because he's... He's at home. Well, he's got the kids in the TMO shipping container, so his wife can work, saving lives. Phil.
The hero's hero.
I am a hero. Everyone clap for me, please.
On Father's Day as well.
God.
I mean, the heroism knows no bounds.
Amazing.
Exactly.
Did you? Is young Thomas old enough to understand Father's Day and that stuff?
He kind of knows what it is because he's made a card at nursery. I don't really think so, though. Although, I mean, what is it? I'm not sure I'm old enough to really know what Father's Day is, other than a way of extracting money out of people.
So cynical, yeah. Phil.
I always assume that Father's Day, much like my birthday is now, is just another day where I've got to do things that other people want. Oh, let's go out for a nice family walk. Nope. Let's go for a nice family meal. Nope. Like, all of these things.
Well, I got that. My daughter, Connie, said, we can spend some time together today, Dad. I went, oh, that'll be nice.
She went, not 3 o'clock, though.
Yeah, we can go into town and you can buy me those Doc Martens. That's what I did today.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great work. I guess perfect Father's Day would be like, bring me a coffee. Make me some breakfast. Leave me alone. Leave me alone is a huge part, isn't it? Leave me alone.
Don't bring me a coffee. They won't get the crema right on the top.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Actually, just don't be in the vicinity when I'm making my coffee.
Exactly.
That'd be great. Yeah. Always be in a different room to me.
So to fathers everywhere, I hope you enjoyed your special day. What a weekend we have had. And I think what we're going to do, gents, is we're going to have two podcasts because I don't want to muddy the waters of this pure celebration of rugby with other stuff.
Yes.
It's maybe more, not negative, but more, just not
off
concerned,
the field.
Off field. So we'll have an on-field pod and an off-field pod, and this is very much on-field, because how good was it, Phil, JB?
Tense. The storylines were incredible. I loved it. I loved it.
I loved it. So there's obviously multiple finals and knockout rugby this weekend,
yeah.
Starting from, there was the Blues Crusaders game, there was the Premiership final, there was the Pro 14 or URC or basically the Currie Cup final, and then there was the Top 14 semi-final or semi-finals. The one that was of most interest to us obviously was the Premiership final, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was an incredible game, incredible storylines. I've seen complaints from some quarters about the level of kicking throughout the game, and people kind of taking umbrage with that and saying it ruined it as a spectacle. I totally disagree.
Yeah.
I think it was an absolutely incredible spectacle. And if you want to watch entire running rugby, there's been some great stuff this season, but you're rarely going to get it in a final. Like the very nature of a final being both the two top teams, so the two most evenly matched teams, playing at the peak with everything on the line, you should not expect open running rugby for the majority of the game. Nor should you really want it, because that would indicate it's going in a direction other than a total arm wrestle, a total battle. And I thought this was a brilliant, brilliant battle and an amazing spectacle.
A great measure of that, and I totally agree, Phil, a great measure of that is the fact that I didn't mind who won. I honestly had no preference. I just enjoyed the 80 minutes. And my nerves were completely shot in the last 5 minutes. My heart rate got really quite high. It was unbelievable tension.
Yeah, I loved all the storylines building up to it.
Yeah, on that, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because Andy Hodson, he emailed contactedchasers@gmail.com. Sorry to butt over, but it's kind of making the point, and he just lists them here. He says, Tim often says stories make matches, and you guys say it as well. Has there ever been a Premiership winning team with more stories in it than Tigers this weekend? Genjam Ford playing in their last matches. Wigglesworth winning another Premiership against his old club in his early 50s. Ben and Tom Young's appearing in the face of family tragedy. Chris Ashton having won titles with one third of the clubs in the league, and Freddie Burns, who looked like he might never fulfil his potential, kicking the winning goal. Awesome stories. I'm not a Tigers fan, and the game was far from a classic in some respects, but a compelling spectacle nonetheless. Loved it, says Andy in Doncaster.
Let's think of it another way. Which is your favourite Premiership final?
Exeter winning their first one.
That was amazing. I agree with that.
Yeah,
but I actually preferred the Exeter semi-final for some reason.
When they beat Saracens?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was incredible.
So, actually, did they beat Saracens or did they beat Wasps?
They beat Saracens at Sandy Park with the last minute, the Henry Slade kick to the corner.
That's the one, yeah. That's the best Premiership match, I think. This was up there, though. This is really up there.
Oh, and people were at the Quinn semi-final last year when they were down to Bristol. Was amazing.
Not interested in that. It's just, I don't know why. Hey, look, it was great. Like, if you're watching, oh my God, what did I just see? That's brilliant. But just, yeah, you know, the problem with that game, I guess, is for half it, you thought it was over. There was no tension, there was no interest. You could easily have walked away from that half time. You'd have been a fool to do so, but you could have. This, there was not a single second of wasted time, wasted rugby. And to the kicking part, apparently Leicester had kicked more than the average per game by about 50 minutes in. So they're already above their average kicking percentage.
And they already kick more than any other team.
But I didn't feel like it. I know that sounds ridiculous. I just didn't feel that. Sometimes you watch games and they're really stilted. This just wasn't that.
It was exciting because the kicking was generally very good. So there was a lot of box kicking.
Yep.
And there was a lot of two main thrusts of the kicking were box kicking and the kick tennis from deep. And it was good because there was a lot of intelligent kicking that was made better by good chases and good pressure.
Yeah.
So that then created a bit of broken field, a half chance that led to other things. So I kind of noted there was a lot of kicking. I didn't realise quite how many kicks. So there was over 100 kicks from hand, which is obviously more than one per minute of the whole game, but when you actually account for ball in playtime, it's more like two or three per minute.
It was the majority of the actual flow of the game. The majority of it was kicking in one form or another. There were very few long periods of phase play. There was still a spectacle. I was just going to say briefly, there's one high-profile game that this reminded me of or was reminiscent of in terms of just one very high-profile game.
Argentina-France.
Nope. It was less to do with the kicking, actually. It reminded me of the World Cup final because I'll put it this way. It was one moment. It was no matter what Saracens did, they just couldn't make the impact. And there was moments where you look at Maro Itoje's face like 50, 60 minutes in and you're like, he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah,
and it was like the World Cup final. It's like, I cannot think my way out of this one.
System error.
And yet, they managed to get so close to winning.
Well, they're a bloody good team. That's why. I mean, they're a really, really good team. I am still thinking about it. I'm astonished that Leicester won, and I'm not sure that Leicester could have won had the team they were not playing not been Saracens, on the account that it won't be often that you're so lucky to have the scrum half that knows their scheme inside out, or their ex-coach and captain who knows them inside out. Even Chris Ashton would have bought something to that party. The guys that they're facing, they know them so much better than Saracens know Tigers. I mean, obviously everyone's been doing analysis and whatnot, but the plan that Tigers came with, and to execute it so crisply and so brilliantly, I mean, that is one for the ages. But I don't think that's how you can build a consistent source of success, because you're not going to be facing Saracens every final.
You were going to jump in and say something then, Phil.
I was, yeah. It's 2 points to the kind of the point that you made, Tim. One on the World Cup final, because I used that World Cup final as a reference point when I saw it. So there was 105 kicks in this game yesterday, and I thought, South Africa kicked quite a lot in that World Cup final. I wonder how many kicks out of hand there were in that World Cup final. So do you want to have a guess? If there was 105 yesterday, how does that compare?
I would say three quarters.
32-12.
Three quarters as many. So I'll go 76, let's say.
JB?
I have no idea. My memory of the World Cup is relatively fluid. So 50?
There were 43.
Wow.
So
wow.
40% of the number of kicks.
Wow.
So yeah. so that yesterday there was a lot of kicking. Yeah. So that's one point. And the other thing you kind of said, Tim, Saracens were kind of struggling to know what to do. And Faz, in his post-match interview, he was kind of like, he said something very similar, which was they wanted to get their teeth stuck into Leicester. And particularly if Leicester... So Saracens wanted to defensively get stuck into Leicester when Leicester play the ball. And Leicester never allowed Saracens to get their teeth stuck into anything, because they almost never played the ball. And it's not quite true that they never played the ball, but...
Have you got tackle stats there, Phil? Have you got number of tackles made?
Yeah. So there were 200 runs, just over 200 runs, which is not that unusual. It's a little bit low, but not that unusual. Tackles was... it's going to be relatively similar, but 244 tackles
in total in the game. Yeah, so we know that there has been games in the past. It, like, a high tackle count for a team is when it gets to about 200. So neither team would be much over 100, if at all.
Mm. Yeah, 120. Both were 1-2-3 and 1-2-1.
The tackles that there were brutal. So physical.
Yeah, wasn't it? The intensity was off the chart.
Yeah.
So just on the Faz full-time chat, I thought he nailed it. I thought his analysis of the game was spot on. And I think what he meant by getting his teeth into them. You see, I'm trying to think of the very famous example of Saracens defending something like 16 phases on the halfway line as if it was the try line and just absolutely demoralising somebody. I can't remember who it was.
They did that against Clermont I think it was a semi-final.
Yeah, it could well have been.
6 years ago, something like that, where they crushed Clermont entirely by their own defence and they just forced errors every single time.
Yeah, so against Harlequins, they had a phase of the game which I thought was instrumental. I actually thought they had the same phase of the game about 60 minutes into this final, but it turns out it wasn't the case. Against Harlequins, they made a stand on basically their own 5 metre and then own try line. Now, that's not optimum for Saracens. I'd rather be doing that on the halfway. But as soon as they win that battle, you just see how it all lifts. And Ben Earl is a classic example of this. He's so annoying because he's always celebrating. He's always celebrating. And you see, when they win these battles, these attritional battles, that's what sets Saracens off. That's what they feed off. So going back to the kicking, I don't know if you've ever seen these videos, but there's a video of Dave Rennie coaching some guys in America. So some brilliant videos of some drills that he does. And he says at the Chiefs, when he was coaching there, we can have two cracks from anywhere on the field. If we get over the game line twice, we'll carry on. If we get beaten, or we go backwards twice, we just kick it. And it just shows that was the right option, because Leicester could have ran into Saracens all day long. But as soon as you start losing the contact area, which you will against Saracens inevitably, just kick it. Just kick it and then, play for the territory and do all those bits and pieces. I thought they had the perfect strategy. I'm just amazed that they were so disciplined to pull it off for so long.
It was it's pressure, isn't it? It's what Exeter did when Rob Baxter always talks about making people get up off the floor again, and they just apply pressure. And when you squeeze that pressure through territory, through physicality, for a long enough period of time, you force mistakes, you force penalties, you make people do that amount of defensive work, which saps the legs. And Leicester did that to Saracens, which is what Saracens have always done to other teams. It was phenomenal, and I agree with you. I actually, when you look at the team 1-23 just on paper, use a Love Island
cliche, go for
on paper. When you do that, you think, well, Saracens have got the better characters, but Leicester are. I mean, this is saying something when you're coming up against Saracens, because there's very few more better drilled, more cohesive, more together groups of men. But that's where Leicester won it.
Yeah. I think Leicester have got a lovely mix, haven't they? Because they've got all of these young kids who are cheap, and then they've got the older boys who are probably also very, very cheap because they're older. But they seem to have a lovely mix in that squad of enthusiasm, of the old head, the experience. They seem to have built that team very, very smartly.
Horrible pack.
And to both of those points, to get that kind of cohesion and to have that lovely balance of team in such a short space of time from being absolutely dreadful and should have been relegated. Not once, but twice. They should have been relegated.
They really should have
been. Borthwick to come in and build that in such a short space of time is incredibly impressive, because that Saracens team have had cohesion for 10+. How long has McCall been there?
Yeah, long time.
10, 12 years.
By the way, I agree with you. Owen Farrell nailed it in his post-match chat. And Mark McCall is just... I don't think he gets anywhere near the credit he deserves.
He doesn't want it, though, does he?
He doesn't want the credit.
It's by design. It's like he doesn't get the credit because he does not seek it in any way, shape, or form.
But that's what makes it. What's that? I can't remember where that quote comes from, but basically, a prerequisite for a position of power should be not
wanting it,
not seeking it.
Yeah, like the prerequisite for taking the scouts camping should be exactly the same thing. You like the first person to put his hand up should say, "No, you definitely can't do it." No. It's an interesting point, that, because looking at the names that Leicester have brought in 12 months ago, these guys would be what, solid Premiership names? Like, if you watch the Premiership week in and week out, you might know Porter, you might know Potter, Stewart probably.
What are you talking about? They got them from like Australia and...
Yeah, but they weren't exactly big names in Australia, were they?
No, they weren't. That's exactly... Not at all.
Yeah.
It was Richard Wilkes as... I mean, he's now on the board, isn't he? That's how good a job Richard Wilkes did.
Are we actually going to name him now?
Well, yeah, that's how good a job Richard Wilkes did. Well, we talked about Nick Kennedy doing the recruitment for Saracens brilliantly. That's how good a job Richard Wilkes has done recruitment-wise. He was the one that brought in Potter and Porter and all these guys. And he's now got a spot on the Leicester board. So I think that tells you everything.
Well, yeah, quite. Not to go too in-depth of, you know, what has gone on at Leicester. I mean,
a lot of Monday morning meetings.
Yeah, there's a lot of Monday morning meetings. There was a lot of influence there to bring in other guys like Sinfield. I mean, Sinfield has no pedigree in rugby union whatsoever. So, yeah, you're right. The recruitment's been, it's been pretty good, I think.
Just on Sinfield, what's great about him is... Much in the way that Alex Sanderson or all these guys, kind of guys at Saracens over the years, and Kelly Brown now and all the rest of it, they fill the gaps that Mark McCall quite happily leaves back. Like, he doesn't have bravado. Doesn't want any of the limelight. Steve Borthwick, very serious, very details-driven. And Kevin Sinfield's got that sort of human...
Yeah. Do you remember meeting Kevin?
Softer skills.
Do you remember meeting Kevin Sinfield at Canterbury?
You can't not love him.
He's a very different character. Like, so we met him at Canterbury, and we had these stupid questions lined up for them, didn't we? Like, what was it? Like, you've got to slate your old team or something? Or no, what's slate your old team? It was build up someone else's team. I can't remember.
Yeah, defend the indefensible.
Defend the indefensible. Yeah, yeah. So you'd give them topics. And some of them are like, oh, I'm not sure, you can't record that.
Big Kev, straight into it. No yep. problems whatsoever. Absolutely. I can't remember like who he slammed, but he was completely different. And then you see him giving interviews. I mean, we know what kind of character he is, but he's very straight down the line. But you must get a mixture of everything when you're working with
him. Well, you wouldn't want to let him down, would you? Like, if he was your defensive coach, you wouldn't want to be in a Monday morning. It'd be like, you know, if the last thing you would want is Kev to go, I'm not upset, I'm not angry, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, true. I don't know why there's something about Steve Borthwick's reaction to the drop goal which moved me inside. Yeah. And I don't know what it is, because there's no histrionics, there's no screaming or shouting. There's just, I can't even describe what I was watching, really.
It wasn't he just, to me, he was just focused on next job, boys, next job.
I know what JB means. He dropped his head. He had his hands in almost like a prayer position, just sort of fingers crossed by his mouth. And when the drop goal went over, his head dropped so that his forehead was just on his hands. And then he just put his head up for a second and just did the biggest, like,
yeah, do you know?
You're right. You can't really describe it, but it was something so human in yeah. it, wasn't it? It was because, really powerful. I agree.
Because again, he's a colossus of a man in every sense of the word. So it's very strange, because he doesn't give emotion really when he interviews. He's very serious. The only way I could describe it, and I'm not trying to be humorous here, but the only way I could describe it is a man who knows he's innocent being found innocent by a court.
You're right.
It's like a relief.
Yes.
It was just amazing. It was just absolutely amazing.
It was a lovely moment.
Yeah. Oh, now, I've got a question for you. When is the best time to win the starting fly half job?
When is the worst time to realise you've spent £1 million on someone who's going to sit on the bench?
yeah. You might need to be retracting those words about Richard Wilkes. When Andre Pollard sits on the bench.
Mm. Well, he was sitting on the bench this weekend and came on with less than 2.5 minutes to go.
Apparently there's teams in Japan that are going to offer Freddie Burns a contract again. So
right they are. Well, yeah. Tell you what, if I'm Freddie Burns, I'm going to be knocking on somebody's door on Monday morning talking about my pay packet. We're 100%.
Maybe a few days after Monday when he's sobered up.
No, do it when you're absolutely leathered over text message.
But the thing is, I will always remember the interview I did with Dave Atwood after Bristol won the Challenge Cup final. And we've had Ed Slater on this podcast saying he would take a big pay cut if he was guaranteed that he would win a title. They're so rare and so special that Freddie Burns has now got Premiership title. And yeah. that is, you know, 20, 30 years' time. You can take the next year. You can take the last year's money or the next year's money, and you know, add a 30, 40, 50, 100 grand even to it. But you know what? It's that whole knowing the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Yeah, yeah, you're 100% right there. I don't want to hark on about something.
And Anthony Watson knows that, because I bet you he's on way less than.
Anthony Watson knows that because the salary cap's tightened up and he's realised that nobody wants him.
Yeah, but I bet you he's gone to a team. He's coming towards the end of his career. He wants to be at a good side to get into the England squad. But also, play when you get towards the end of your career, like, I've earned all this money, I've won nothing.
Yeah, and ironically for Anthony Watson, people went to Bath to win stuff. You know, people were always going to... I mean, I'm not saying Bath have always spent up to the salary cap, but I'm sure people would go there for a slight pay cut to be around the likes of Anthony Watson and Kyle Eastman and George Ford back in the day. Carl Ferns, of course. You know, that's what they would do. Yeah, it's mad. Well, it's absolutely mad. Well,
for the longest time, they've had one of the best, if not the best, squads on paper in terms of the names who are there, even though they've been... performed below the level of the sum of their parts.
And by the way, on George Ford, right, obviously he's on to sale this year. I don't think George Ford thought he'd ever win a title with Leicester. If you asked him that 12 months ago, I don't think, you know, I think one of the reasons he's thinking, let's go to sale, all South Africans, dynamic head coach. I think by the time he came round to realising, yeah, Leicester actually is the real deal here, his heart had already been... sold the dream of moving back up north and playing for Sanderson. Well,
with the talent he's got, I wouldn't have been surprised, you know, if when he's retired and stuff in the years to come, I wouldn't be surprised when memoirs are written. I wouldn't be surprised if George Ford was desperately trying to get out of Leicester when they were in the bad times.
I would not be surprised if he said something along the lines of, "I don't want to waste my time." And
Matt O'Connor.
Matt O'Connor. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if that passed his lips, and I wouldn't blame him either. No. But yeah, it's just incredible. And I wonder if we're going to see more of this sort of stuff in the Premiership when teams start to take their recruitment really seriously. They get experts in. They realise that the best place to spend your money is on your head coach and your coaching talent, because you can't spend it on your playing staff. You've only got a certain amount to spend. You need to target older players, in my mind, and I'll talk a bit more about that later. I wonder if you'll see more Leicester Tigers-type teams. I suspect that we will, and more stories like that.
Yeah, we will. In the off-field pod, we will touch in some depth on the salary cap report, the first one to be published, yes, Following Lorne Miner's report, yes, 2 years ago or 18 months ago.
Peter Shaw has emailed one of our American listeners, contacthedchasers@gmail.com. He said he's been on the move and working a lot. Sadly, nowhere MLR team in sight where he is in Wisconsin, a land of beer, cheese and the great outdoors. That being said, he's still kept up with the rugby and the pod, a riveting Premiership final. Even though I would love to have seen his mercurial Northampton Saints in the final, it was a spectacle. His impressions, gutted for George Ford to be taken off, but what a replacement and what a drop goal to win it all. Yeah, that was so poetic, that finale, wasn't it?
I do love Freddie Burns.
Yeah, who doesn't? Everyone does.
Sorry, just to hop back to something I've said before, I'm certain that he is Leicester's starting fly half. Certain, and I'm certain that Pollard is going to play 12. It just fits too well.
Interesting point made here as well. Billy Vunipola played his best match in years and should have been man of the match. I agree with that.
Totally,
he was monumental. Yeah. And Alex Donbrandt injury, we'll talk about England squads and stuff in a bit, but he put his hand up.
Yeah, let's just talk about some of the performance of the players, because we've not really spoke about anyone.
Well, Billy Vunipola made more carries in the game than the entire Leicester pack combined.
No.
Yep.
That's astonishing.
He also ran for 100 metres. He made the most metres ball in hand, and he made nearly 30% of Saracen's metres with ball in hand on his own.
Yeah, his step on the 8 pickup as well. Not moving fast, but moving very effectively. Yeah,
that step and then go was amazing.
Yeah, there's so many areas that I thought Saracens would have beaten Leicester at. I thought they'd have been much better with their attacking line out. I thought bringing in Ezekwe and then pairing it with McFarland and Itoji, I couldn't see that.
Swinners would have brought it home, wouldn't he, mate?
Yeah, Swinners would have brought it home, too bad.
Just on this...
By the way, Swinners, the man... What a massive tantrum. Doesn't get picked for final and retires. It's pathetic.
I've got to say this little anecdote in Peter Shaw's email before he's done. He says, speaking of Billy... I've got a story I heard recently. After I moved to Milwaukee, I hooked up with the local rugby club, the Barbarians, and they've been playing a bit with their old boys. Good lad. Great guys. So one of them is Tongan and grew up mostly in England, and his friends with the Vunipolas.
Oh.
He was invited to the christening of one of the Vunipolas' children recently in England. At the christening, Billy's mother, who is a minister in the church in England for the Tongans and was doing the ceremony, publicly at a christening in front of all their friends and family... publicly berated him and Mako for not being in good form. She told them both, if you don't start playing better, Eddie is never going to pick you again. Love these tough mums. It sounds like they listened anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, something's going right there.
He says, wish me good luck at the Lakefront Sevens downtown in Milwaukee, right on Lake Michigan.
That sounds
so good. Can we enter our Egg Chasers team there? I'm playing in the old boy Hippos division and I haven't played Sevens in a long time. Let the boys play and cheers. Oh, good luck with that, Pete.
Yes, indeed. Best of luck. And that is a tournament I would like to compete in.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Leicester. Let's talk about the actual players. Who do you think had a good game? Who do you think had a bad game? Let's dissect this a little bit more.
Jasper Visa, as he always does.
Mm-hmm. I actually thought he was quiet.
Oh, no, he's just horrible.
I know he got man
so horrible.
I know he got man of the match, but against Northampton,
He was everywhere. And maybe he just played so well that game, that's what I'm comparing him to. But he just carried and carried and carried and carried.
Porter and Visa were just so hard.
Porter did very, very well. He wanted to call him Liebenhang.
Liebenberg.
Because of the old Stade Français Centre. He was monumental. In fact, both, you know, if you're talking about hard carries, both the tries came from there. Exactly that, hard carries. I thought Oli Chesham looked good. I think they're going to see a lot more from him. He's so naturally strong in the ball carry, but he doesn't seem to carry enough. Mind you, am I saying that because they kicked so much? Maybe that's why I'm saying it. Maybe last week they were all carrying a lot more because there was a lot less kicking. But it felt like they could do more. I tell you the other guy as well, who I think is going to go up an extra level. And it sounds ridiculous because he's already playing for England, but Freddie Stewart. I think Freddie Stewart's attacking running game is really a lot better than people give it credit for.
I tend to agree with that. And the break down the right-hand side, which was one of the few breaks in the first half down the right-hand side, where he breaks and then gets kind of tackled and offloaded to Ashton, that was so close to being a try.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the amazing Saracen scramble defence, that would have been an Ashton try. That was awesome.
I mean, he's big, he's rangy. Because that range allows him to offload. He's just a bit more awkward to tackle. I made the comparison before. Israel Folau comes to mind. He's a similar sort of height. I think Israel Folau is probably better in every single area. But the fact that you're even comparing him to Israel Folau, it shows he's a bloody good player. Bloody good player.
I thought when Dan Kelly was injured and out, I thought, oh, well, that's a bit of steel missing.
Mm.
But just to say again, Guy Porter was just monstrous. Mm.
Yeah, I think...
Beast of a defender.
Yeah. I think that... I'd probably agree with you, Jay, that Visa was a bit lucky to get man of the match.
Yeah.
He worked hard, he carried very hard, but he did, by his standards, have a quiet game, which is not surprising because that Saracen defence is pretty handy. I probably would have given it to... It could have been Stewart, it could have been Liebenberg, it could have been Freddie Burns.
It should have been Freddie Burns. Well, no, actually. You know, that is the big showy thing, isn't it? To
Wigglesworth?
Wigglesworth is a shout for him. I tell you what, I thought Youngs was really good when he came on.
That's a great shout.
Chesham was brilliant as well.
Yeah, Chesham is ace.
He was the best second row on the park.
At times. Like, when you're on the same park as Mario Itoje, look at him as sort of the benchmark of what hard work and niggle. I mean, the amount of interventions Mario has. I don't actually think Mario carries as hard as Oli Chesham. Oli Chesham carries bloody hard. Just needs more frequency. More frequency. But yeah, that would be a tiny criticism for a man who's now a Premiership champion.
Just
Montoya was ace. That's another one.
Montoya.
Whichever.
just flipping for a second to... where is it? Where's the email? Oh, yeah. Email from Carl. contactedchases@gmail.com, remember. Thank you for all these. They're brilliant ones this week. He says, a quick question before the result in the final today. So he sent this before the match. What have you made of the way the media have portrayed Saracens in the build-up to this final? Every headline I've seen has been what a journey they've been on, how well they've done to stay together and coming back to reclaim potential glory. Have the media already forgotten the reason they were relegated? This was a sentiment that a lot... And I only say this wrong because what Carl's written to us there is what I agree with him. I've seen a lot of people saying that in reaction to the media portrayal.
Now, the only people I kind of let get away with slandering Saracens are Exeter fans and Harlequins fans because they're rivals. I kind of get it. Look, you're doing what you're meant to do. I don't think it's really fair, though. They've done their time. They've done their punishment. The boys stayed together. They came back. I know that certain people inside professional rugby think that the hangover from the salary cap cheating is still in effect. So whatever those boys were given or whatever was done at the start of their careers at Saracens kind of still holds water with them. That's why they're still there. So they might have an advantage over everyone else still, like I said, sort of like a hangover. But they have done the time. They've done the time in the championship. They're back. I admire them for it. I really admire them for sticking with sticking with everybody. I admire the boys for wanting to play in the championship, come back up. I can't really say anything too bad about Saracens, to be honest.
They put their England futures on the line for it, and I think this comes back to guys like Mark McCall again. But I think it says a lot about those people. If what happened at Saracens had happened at most, the majority, if not all other clubs, that team would have been decimated. And two things can be true at once. It can be wrong that they did, and they went down and they got relegated, for goodness sake.
They played a season of empty rugby.
Yeah, Leicester should have been relegated, and they didn't because Saracens went down. So Leicester fans are the last ones that should be complaining about it. Anyway, so they did that. But I still think, whilst all that is true, it's also true that it is unbelievable that that whole squad stayed together.
Yeah. It kind of confirms my idea that instead of relegation, we should have a naughty step, because clearly you can go away from the Premiership for a year, come back and be competitive. And it's over COVID. Like, they didn't even know if they were going to be playing Championship rugby. They had no idea. I think they had an abbreviated season anyway. There was a lot to admire from Saracens. And I think if you take the attitude that, oh, they're still just cheats or whatnot, you're failing to learn from what they've done. And that's probably says more about you than anyone else, because you don't want to learn about what this incredible team has done, or you know, value them for that. And that's exactly how we should look at Saracens.
So I agree with all of that, and I think it's I do look at it as a remarkable story. I think it is also important to just recognize which I think most coverage I've seen does recognize that they were relegated for a reason.
they were
in the wrong. They were relegated. They paid the penalty, and then they have moved on, and this is now the redemption.
Well, we had the two salary cap cheats in the final, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Well, it makes you wonder. Maybe the plan was to lose it so they didn't have to go through the open book process at the at the end of winning it.
I mean, there were scales, obviously, but if we want to just sort of acknowledge things in the past, let's acknowledge the fact Leicester should have been relegated. In any normal year would have been, and in years where it wasn't ring fenced, they would have been, and also they did cheat.
Yeah,
whether it was deliberate or not, it was only $300k they got fined, didn't they?
Well, just think about this, and this is
versus 5 million that Saracens got fined.
This is not a knock. I'm gonna pick Sale at random, okay? And we all know how I feel about Sale. Completely neutral on the whole topic.
Of course.
Now, Sale are built for one thing, and that is to be successful in the Premiership. If they got relegated, those players wouldn't stay there. And nor should they, because they're professional athletes. They need to go and win championships and be selected for South Africa or England, or do whatever they need to do, particularly the South African contingent. Maybe some of the academy boys stay. The fact that so many of the senior England lads stayed at Saracens, and the ones
to go and play Ampt Hill,
yeah, and the ones that wanted to go, they were allowed to go. They were allowed to go on loan to Bristol, if that made sense, or you know, follow their dreams of European glory like Skelton did. They could go, and they decided not to. I think that's pretty impressive.
Agreed.
Yeah, agreed with that. And it is interesting that some of the guys who went. But came back. So guys like Ben Earl, Max Mallins, Nick Tompkins went due to preserving and or pushing for their international career, and were successful in doing so. Mm-hmm. As in their standing now is higher than it was 2 years ago when they left Saracens on loan.
Yeah. Yeah, Ben Earl did not have a good game. I'm going to put that one out there. Anyone think Ben Earl had a good game?
Quiet game.
Quiet.
Yeah.
Well, it was about half an hour in when I was thinking, I don't remember a game where there hasn't been a turnover on the deck, like a jackal turnover. There wasn't a single one, and then yeah. And then there was a run of the Montoya and Rafael
made a couple of great ones. I'm not necessarily sure. I feel a bit unfair saying that about Earl now. I think both teams looked after their ruck incredibly well. I think that's probably more to do with it. But again, yeah, we didn't see the dynamic carries from him that we saw against Harlequins, which is a shame.
Yeah. There was an amazing period where that period in the second half, I think it was around 60 minutes, when Leicester were banging on the door and you thought, if they breach the line here and score, it's over, it's done. And Saracens somehow again and again managed to repel it and then got themselves into that position. Andy Christie made that break. Wayne Barnes got in the way of Billy Vonopola when they were 5 metres away from the line. And then they ended up taking the 3 points from a penalty to tie things up at 12 all. It was just awesome.
I was sat next to Phil, as I said, if for whatever reason Tigers do not get a try now, I think they've probably lost this. If Saracens turn it over, they've lost. If Tigers score, they win. If Tigers do not score anything, they lose. The only way this stays competitive is Tigers 3 points, because I just felt there's more to come from Saracens. I was amazed that Saracens didn't go over for a try, actually. On the Christie break.
Yeah. No, agreed. I like the fact that we've talked about the game, we've celebrated all the great things, talked about players and stuff, and we haven't mentioned the two incidents which people were losing their minds over, which I don't mind and I like. And I'm going to say we don't really need to discuss it, because both yellow cards were equivalent to each other, and it was consistent within the game, and it's been consistent over the last few weeks, and they were given yellows, not reds. So crack on.
Yeah, there's a sort of standard now, which I quite like. Now it's a little bit, it's a little bit more, what's the word for it? Woolly compared to the old standard, where everything was a red. I'm not sure it's in the best interest of player welfare, but I do prefer it as a spectacle. I think keeping players on the field is better. I think if they're going to change behaviour, the change of behaviour has already occurred. I don't think it's their badly coached or bad technique. I just think it's a very, very hard game to play. That said, Alan Davis, I mean, he was lucky. Bloody
yeah, that was as we talked about before, yeah. As we talked about many times. It's bugged me down the years. The Fafterclerk clause, where Fafterclerk has got a free reign to go and clothesline any forward he wants because he's small and the forward's big.
And then the ref has to applaud him and say he's really plucky. Brave. yeah. What was the other one? The other one felt like it was very lucky. Was it Porter?
Phil would know this. No, it was...
It was on Billy.
It was Potter.
Potter, that's the one. I thought that was also a very, very lucky one.
Yeah. Agreed.
Great question. I thought in the context of last week, they were consistent. They're not consistent with the context of the season. And the inconsistency is shown when you watch the Will Skelton red card today.
Although that was much more brutal and no rap on a man who didn't have the ball.
In what is effectively an exhibition game.
There is all of that, but I guess it comes back to this interpretation that seemed to be set by Luke Pearce and has been used with Fafterclerk and others in the past, where the degree of danger needs to be judged in the context of the size of the man. So Will Skelton, who is enormous, him going in full... With a similar amount of relative force, Will Skelton to Alad Davis, the danger is greater for Will Skelton doing it, and that is how it was adjudged.
So the coaching point is, have lots of players, as we talked before, you can get red cards against your opponents by having players that are very short with enormous heads,
yep,
and making sure your players are also extremely small, and then they can smash people as much as they want. Great.
Exactly.
Great coaching points.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Brilliant.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So was everyone happy with the event? Oh, a big shout out to BT Sport, by the way. I thought the coverage was absolutely spot on, except for one missing member. I think it would have been
fine.
Inordinately better had you been there, Tim. But you know,
I got a mention at the end by Doyler. I was happy with that. But how good did they look?
Do you know?
I'm completely biased here, and I agree with you. I thought BT's coverage was, and I flicked between the two when I could, and I've watched bits and bobs of both. I thought it was absolutely peerless.
Yeah, do you know, it does make, I know this is my little thing, and I know I'm biased on this, but when everyone's treating it like the biggest game in the world, and everyone's got their ties on and stuff, it does make, when the broadcast team look like they really care, it does make you care more.
Who do you think looked best?
Oh, that's a great question. I thought Ugo's jacket was outstanding.
It was great.
I thought Doyler really... I mean, the thing is, Doyler and...
He had trainers on, and he looked great.
Yeah, Doyler and Ugo are very much focused at the same demographic, you know, kind of cool, kind of trendy. I thought Nick looked the best. I loved his tie jacket combo.
Yeah, the red yellow tie. Is that Perfect. like an MCC tie?
Yeah, there's a certain element of... grace and style with that whole look.
I thought Lawrence and Ben looked outstanding.
Lawrence really
looked great.
Yeah, because he really toned it down. It's just it's just a suit. Yeah, and you know he lets his presence do the talking.
Oh, that's so true, JB.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I quite like about I don't know if I should say this. Anyway, no, it's just an observation. Martin Bayfield's. Is going to please a certain demographic as well. His trousers are incredibly tight.
Can I say something about Bates, right?
So I loved it. I loved his get-up as well.
Me and Phil have got a really good friend of ours, and you'll know him. Very, very tall man.
Okay,
and
yeah.
We keep saying to him, like, why don't you just buy yourself a jacket and, you know, look a bit smarter? And he goes, I can't, I'm too tall. And we've actually had to... over beer, pull up pictures of Martin Bayfield wearing jackets to prove you can be a big man and wear nice jackets and look great.
You don't have to wear like an NFL lineman suit.
Don't look like this with 12 buttons. Look like this. It's dead easy. It's like a normal jacket, but bigger.
I agree with everything you said. I think Ugo's jacket was incredible. Only Ugo could pull it off.
Yeah.
I thought Lawrence Delalio was probably... It's probably the closest to what I'd wear. I thought it was great, his look. And I thought Sarah looked impeccable as well.
Yeah. Oh, with a tie.
Does. Yeah, it's great.
She had a tie on.
She had a tie on.
She did have a tie on, yes. Tie in a jacket.
Makes all the difference.
Yeah. And I love the way they do the final where they bounce around to different bits of the stadium. So-and-so's there. I'm out front here. I'm here. And it's. I just love it. I love the finals day BT Sport coverage.
I did have one small criticism. It wasn't so much of the coverage, but maybe of the event itself. Sophie Ellis Bextor, nothing wrong with her. I'm sure she... I just don't know if that is for the replica-wearing rugby fan, Sophie Ellis Bextor singing out the back of a lorry.
Hmm.
Like, surely a guitar band of some description would be better.
Well, the feeling were there as well, I think, who are... That's, like, Sophie Ellis Bextor is married to the main man in the feeling, I think.
That would make more sense.
But so they were there too. I mean, it's not a Super Bowl halftime show, is it? But it's a good effort.
It is a good effort. It is. I mean, yeah, it's better than Scouting for Girls at the final of the Super League.
Just a bit better. A little bit, maybe.
Oh, do you know what me and Phil watched after the rugby? Having a few beers. Stereophonics.
Oh, I watched a bit of Stereophonics as well.
It's like, they make so much money, don't they, out of their Welsh heritage. They could not... We were discussing, like, where else could they sell out a stadium? Like, if they came over to Liverpool, are they selling out a stadium? Nope.
I think they're an arena band. They're not like... No, not a stadium. They could play at Manchester Arena, 15,000, but not... No.
It was incredible.
And they did headline a festival that I was at a few years ago, but... No, even then it was nothing like that. You're right.
Because I think they're so linked to the rugby. When you go to Cardiff, it's all Stereophonics during match day. Or it used to be.
Yeah, when Phil and I went there for Wales Island, there was a band on outside the ground, and basically every other song was a Stereophonics song.
Not underneath the not where Cardiff Blues are. The Cardiff Blues, it's brilliant there.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I was talking about that last night. That was one of my favourite places to drink in my 20s, going to watch Wales. Loved it.
Yeah, it's good fun. Very good fun going to match day in Wales, Cardiff. Yeah.
Well, I guess if Stereophonics were playing the Millennium Stadium, they weren't available to play the car park in Twickenham on the back of the bus.
The Principality.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, I'm going to segue us to some other games. We haven't even talked about, like, Freddie Burns and stuff. I bet his Instagram still, he's like...
Do you know Freddie Burns?
Broadcasting live. I do love the fact that in his ITV interview, he said, and I'm just... It was ITV4, unfortunately, not ITV. I would love this to have gone out on ITV1 at like tea time on a Saturday evening. I'm gagging for a beer. I can't wait to get on the bus with the boys and have 3 days on the sauce.
Yeah, they were very militant, the rugby players, this week about telling us that they're going for a beer. Very militant.
Yeah, maybe we should mention that in the off-field pod.
Yes, quite. Yes,
but just to segue us from Freddie Burns' drop goal to the other games and other stuff going on, Jack Armstrong has emailed. He says, love the pod, blah, blah, blah. What odds would you have got on a drop goal being scored in the Prem final, URC final and Super Rugby final? After a barren few years, are we seeing the return of the drop goal, possibly as a result of the law changes making extended pick-and-go phase play in the 22 less feasible?
I'm not sure it ever went away, did it? I mean, we do have these rashes of them. They do seem to come and go in, you know, certain stretches of games, and just people forget about them. It's habit more than anything else.
Well, the stakes are such that in finals, that 3 points to win a match or 3 points is magnified to such a level that it really means something. So having a shot at it. Mm. Quite often they were always used on free plays, weren't they?
Yes.
Like when you had penalty advantage.
And then they said, no, you can't do that because you're kicking away the ball. But actually, I think they should bring that back, because if they miss it, yeah, fine, have a penalty. But if they get it, we don't need the rigmarole of stopping the game, putting the ball on the tee, yada, yada, yada.
Anyway. Well, that's the Richie Mulungu one was, I think it was the first point scoring in the game from a free play. He had penalty advantage and he went for the drop goal and slotted it.
Yeah, good lad.
Mm.
Now, I don't want to talk about Super Rugby. You can if you want. I just don't want to. Maybe we should. No, that's not.
Scott Robinson did some more breakdancing.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope he carries on winning until the day he can no longer physically breakdance.
How? I didn't see his breakdancing this time. Was it? Is he? Is age starting to show?
Well, he's moving well. You know, he's moving. Okay. He's not President Biden yet. I hope he just carries on winning. I want to see how long this can go for. It was one of those things, he did it once, it looked cool, but now it's more of a tradition. Mm. So I'm into it. If he does it once a year because he's won a trophy, more power to him. You're allowed to do it if you win trophies.
You can do whatever you want if you're winning trophies.
Neck beers, break dance.
I think there's a kind of wry smile on his face when he's doing it. I don't think he's taking himself 100% seriously. So it's very... Yeah, I quite enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
Did you see any of the... I know you didn't. Did you watch any of the URC?
No, I don't have Premier Sport.
Well, I got my £100 worth, my £100 game. So as tradition dictates, I've got to watch the URC final because otherwise it's a complete waste of money. Honestly, how can I say this? The good bits about the game. Evan Roos is a monstrous man. Watch out for him. I think he's going to make big waves around the world. I really do. That's one thing. The second thing is, it reminded me of when I was like 21, loving watching South African rugby. Number three, it was a really dreadful game. I mean, I am astonished. I was thinking about this whilst I was making breakfast this morning. How those two teams beat Ulster and Leinster is beyond me. Do you agree with that, Phil?
Yeah, this was not the best game, the best quality game. Now, there's obviously got absolute mutants in the squad, and amazing scrum and scrimmages, and amazing physicality. But that was about it.
Yeah,
that was.
Were they playing like it really meant something, and like it was they were tense?
No.
Well, it looked like people were under pressure. Let's put it that way, because there were so many errors, so many basic errors, and some of the passing in the wide channels was,
oh my god,
unbelievable.
At one point, I texted a fairly well-renowned coach and said,
I take it all back. Skills are necessary. Because you just take it for granted. They were, all these passes were hitting static men. And these were the centres. Lots of loose play. Some of the kicking was completely aimless. I'm trying to think of the really good... Evan Roos's carries were exceptional. The first try was good. The first try.
Mm. Was 2 minutes in. Yeah, 2 minutes into the game, you're like, right, here we go.
Yeah, it was a great try. The hooker whose name escapes me, what was his name?
Kotzer.
Kurtzier.
No, it's not Kurtzier.
Oh,
it's,
right, yeah.
It's spelled K-O-T-Z.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, he... no, never mind. Yeah, he offloaded, great try. Or he received an offload, great try. After that, you tell me.
Full stadium?
A very, very busy stadium.
Oh, cool.
It wasn't full. It was the biggest attendance for the URC this year. I mean, this was not a good game. Somehow I feel positive about it, though. Because I like South African stadiums, which are full. I think if this drives South Africans back to their stadiums,
do the Curry Cup then. Do the Curry Cup.
I don't know. There's this... You look at the Springbok team and you look at the strength of them. You look at the fact that only South Africans were scoring tries this weekend in the Premiership final and the URC finals. And now you think about South Africa doing TV deals ostensibly in either euros or pounds. I think it might not be the optimum solution for us, but I think it could work out really well for South African rugby.
It can work out really well for South African rugby. I don't care personally. Well, they're going to be fine, whatever.
No, they're not.
Whatever they are.
They're not.
They are. They won a World Cup without any of this.
Well, they won a World Cup because people were babysitting their players overseas.
Which will still happen. Japan and France will dictate that will still happen.
You've got to be careful with this because you can be a hypocrite. And as a well-known hypocrite, I do tend to go down this path. So I would say the danger... when Wales lose some players, it's okay. They can just nip back over the border and they can play for Wales. When South Africa lose all of their players and there's no domestic rugby to watch, that is a bit of a problem. So having the South African domestic teams actually...
Well, they can have a Curry Cup, like I say, and there you go.
Yeah, but how would you pay for that in Rand when there's euros and pounds and yen on the table and your currency is depreciating because you live in effectively a criminal mafia state? It doesn't work too well. So
I just don't think the South African national rugby team is something... fine, if you're concerned about the South Africa country, there's lots to worry about there. The South African national rugby team do not have a concern in the world. They do not need anything.
No, well, yep.
So if that's your motivation, I don't get it. If it was, we need to get Welsh regions more cash so they can.
Yeah, weirdly, I don't care about that.
Well, but that's the only thing that the URC having South African teams in is doing is getting more money for the non-South African teams
and the South African teams.
Well, yeah, but their national team's going to be amazing, whatever happens.
Yeah, well, that's not true though, is it? Because remember how bad they were,
the world champions.
Yeah, do you remember how bad they were though? I mean, they were hilariously bad at one point. I mean, hysterically bad.
Yeah, when Peter de Villiers was there.
Yeah, I mean, it was brilliant, actually. And they had all the talent in the world. They had something like, I'm sure someone reported something like 250 players at that time in Europe. In Europe. They've got more professional players than any other country in the world. And yet their national team was
just goes
horrendous.
Back to your, just goes back to your coaching point.
Mm. Anyway, there was another part of this game which I quite liked. And the French semi-final brought this home, both of them. I have constructed a team of players, and the youngest is 32, who played this weekend. Anyone want to give a stab at some of the players on display?
Wiggy.
Wigglesworth, 39.
Freddie Burns is 32. That's probably old Chris Ashton.
Chris Ashton.
No, Mornay Steyn's got a fly half.
Mornay Steyn is not a fly half. He's a fullback in this, but he's 37.
Chris Ashton, 34, 35.
Chris Ashton is on the wing, 35.
Bismarck.
Bismarck Duplessis, 38.
Good lad.
Dan Cole?
Dan Cole, no, 32. Didn't make the list.
Vadim Kobelash.
Well done, Tim. 38.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I'll give you some... You won't get some of these. So... second youngest in the team who would not qualify for North Dorset Sevens veterans would be Kane Douglas at 33. He'd be second row.
Brock Harris, who spent a lot of time at the Dragons and is now a URC champion, 37. Just so you know, Charlie Falmawina is 35.
Wow.
Duplessis, obviously 38. But don't forget ex-French captain, Guillaume
Girardeau,
35. A guy called Jacquet. What's his first name? Doesn't really matter, but he's a French second row player this weekend, 37.
Pick'em Olls,
36.
Oh, King Louis.
Elstad. Reinhard Elstad is 32. Tranduc is 36.
Tranduc.
Yeah.
Urdipaletta.
Urdipaletta, sorry. What do I call him? Whatever I call him. He's also 36. Cambezu is a sensor who played this weekend, 35. Cornell Hendricks played as well. And he looked far older than the 34 years of age that he actually is. So only three guys in my old man's team are under 35. Now, the reason I bring this up, other than it's fun, is because this is the sharp end of the season. And there's some old boys not knocking about. I actually think there's something to read into this, whether it be conditioning or how professionals look after themselves. Maybe it's something to do with player welfare and how they're maintaining these older bodies for longer. It could be like the change. I don't know. Maybe the change of lifestyle. They're not the hard drinking old school lads that they used to be. Or maybe the salary caps are just making teams really think about where they get value from.
I think it's an interesting point. I would actually say it was ever thus. And when you get to finals, experience really matters. Yeah. And to go back to something that I bang on about all the time, the obsession that happened with football and the footballification of rugby means that rugby fans are desperate to get the kids in. When we have collectively, and certainly I've been banging the drum for Danny Kerr for years, and it's nice to see him back. It's actually respect the experience because it really matters. And the finals weekend has demonstrated that.
Yeah, there are some positions, weirdly enough, where the age just seems to not be as much of a problem. In this case, it looked like fly halves. I mean, a lot of backup fly halves, admittedly. I mean, there's a lot of good young guys out there, like Tranduc, Urdipaletta. Paletta, isn't it? Stain. It's just quite a lot of them. But Ashton's a fascinating example because he shouldn't exist. There's no way a 35-year-old should be dominating on the wing, but he looks as sharp as he's ever looked. So there's definitely some interesting stuff going on there.
Yeah, I think a bit of it is the conditioning and sports science that has improved. And if you look at someone like Ashton, like his jawline now, when he was playing for England age 24, he always had that bit of puppy fat around him.
He's shredded now, isn't he?
He's absolutely shredded.
He's chiseled, yeah. There's not an ounce of fat on him. I have no doubt he's still putting good numbers on his speed and strength.
Yeah, I guess if you get to 30 and you're still playing, or 31 or 32, that is the age you realise you've only got one career, and I guess you would get a little bit more serious.
Well, also, that's the age when you're just about to approach your prime if you're a prop forward.
Yeah. When would you say you... Because
traditionally, it was always the case that... Like, I know there are always exceptions to this, but in general, it was always the case that if you were a back, you had to really be... If you were going to make it, you had to start making significant moves by the time you were in your late teens, at a push, early 20s. But if you were a front five forward, actually 25, 26, no big deal if you're just establishing yourself at that point.
Do you think there's an element of rugby, though, that because of the complexities of the game and because... you might know a lot of rugby players, but it's only people who play in your position that can give you really detailed information about what you're meant to be doing. So we could play together for the best part of a year, best part of a decade, right? You play prop forward, I play in the centres. We might have absolutely no understanding of what each other do. We might have an idea of the game in general. And because of the complexities of the game, maybe you've got to play it for a longer time to become good. And that's when you become Jimmy Gopith.
Well, yeah, there'll definitely be elements of that. I don't know what you think, Phil, but I would say that possibly why that's changed and why you get more guys like Bevan Rodd and I suppose Ellis Genge came through younger and Carl Sinclair and the like, and those are just English examples, but there's lots of other young front five forwards now. Maro Itoje was another. But I think the difference is that it much more the case when you and I, Phil, were all the three of us were sort of coming through, is that the reason it was sort of more normal for front five forwards to be 25 is because it takes years of that level of conditioning to get to that elite level. And actually, these lads are in the gym.
Yeah.
By the time they get through, they've been in the gym 5-6 years hitting some heavyweights.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously get the absolute young, the absolute stud. Evan Roos would be that example, 24-year-old, just muscle everywhere. But yeah, it takes some time to harden up.
Phil?
All that sort of stuff.
I find it interesting seeing the ages of people, and that I think there is a link to the salary caps and the value piece, because we'll go into the salary cap in more detail in the off-field pod, but if you saw the age profile, the salary cap age profile, where it was grouped together, there was a increase. So the younger you are, the less you're on. So 17 to 19, 50K-ish, early 20s, somewhere between 75 and 120K is the average salary. Then there's a big jump. So when you're 26 to 28 in your prime, that is the highest average salary for players in the Premiership. And then it tapers off after that. So, but it doesn't taper off. So players over 32 are still twice as much as players 23 to 25. So there's a profile there, but those guys who are at the back end, while they will be earning slightly less than they were when they were in that kind of true peak, late 20s, they've got so much more experience. And there's a value piece there that it adds, having that experience, what it costs you in some respects, you get a lot of value in others. So it's interesting to see Leicester being successful with a few key guys like that in their team.
Yeah.
I think, football, like I said, get the kids in, but there's been some remarkable value from older signings. I mean, it's cliche now, but you always think of the rather successful AC Milan teams from a decade ago, and they were all old, like really, really old.
Well, and let's just jump to the other game, because when you look ahead to the summer going down to Australia, I want every bit of experience that Eddie Jones can put on the field out on the field, because a young team just got absolutely ripped to shreds.
They did, didn't they? They did. And to your point about getting the kids in, it does make a mockery, doesn't it, of not... I mean, Billy Vinopola was not available for this game for obvious reasons. But I can't see a good reason to exclude him. I mean, there's no reason. He's 29? Where he played yesterday.
I don't care how old he is. Look at how he played yesterday. That's it.
Like Simon Shaw in his last game for the Lions. An absolute monster. Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I mean...
Simon Shaw was still playing... didn't he go to the 2011 World Cup 2 years after that as well?
Yes, he did.
Was he 40 or 39? 39, 40? I don't know.
Yeah,
he's 38 when he played for the Lions.
I'm sure he went to the 2011 World Cup 2 years after.
Oh, no, maybe it was he went to the 2007 World Cup. Did he go to the 2011 World Cup?
No, 2011 he got... No, hang on. When they won it, he was dropped for Martin Corrie. He went to South Africa and then he played again.
Maybe he went to the 07, he was in the World Cup final.
Yes, I think he was.
He was in the 2011.
Shouldn't World doubt Cup Phil final. With facts,
World Cup,
we?
Not final, but World Cup. Aged 38 then.
Brilliant. So, England were absolutely... Were they... Yeah, they were dreadful.
Have you lost faith in Eddie yet?
I don't know what to make of it, because I'm not just going to say, oh, it wasn't a proper England team, this was kids. I'm not going to make excuses. England were very, very poor.
It's a horrible game, the Barbarians game, though, isn't it?
Well, I think they were poor because, well, and this, you could say this comes down to the coaches. I think there's a lot of players that got a chance today that just, excuse my language, shat the bed. And won't be back in an England shirt in a while. Part of that might be down to the way they were set up, which Eddie said after the game. It's like, we were trying to play a different way today. We had the opportunity to experiment. we didn't execute, we didn't do it. We wanted to play much closer to the gain line, play more on the front foot, and it didn't work.
I think the Barbarians fixture is a very tricky one, because if you win it, everyone says it's a waste of time. If you lose it, you're a disaster, and you've got to win with some style. I think the message to the players when they go out there must be very mixed, because the Barbarians are on the beers for 5 days. 5 days worth of drinking. So how do you prepare for that mentally as a England international? I know it's very easy to say, oh, yeah, well, you know, you just go and treat it like a test match. But you know it's not a real test match because it's uncapped. All the big boys are playing in the final.
No, but they're playing for a place on the plane to Australia. You can't say this, that they wouldn't have been taking this massively seriously.
But, you know, when you watch like the A-team or the Saxons or whatever they're called nowadays, and you see all these great names and they get thrown together and the product is dross because they only just about know each other's names. So part of it did remind me of that. You know, you're asking an awful lot of them to play a very good structured game against a team which is not going to be structured, and they're going to be kicking it about and back heeling it over posts and all sorts.
A lot of jokes about it's like watching Bath.
I do like that. I've got to say, there is one element of this which I did think during the game, which is I won't go from that angle. Let's put it this way. When you're used to losing, you shouldn't be in an international team.
We've been over this. We've had this before. Yep. Let's not have it again. I could not disagree more.
No.
Like, pick on merit in each individual Trolls. Spot.
In.
Well, yeah, but that's on... that would
merit?
I would say no on... that wouldn't be in on merit. But there are...
Cock and a singer.
No, merit? He wouldn't be in on merit, but there are other players.
He wouldn't be in on talent, let alone merit.
George Ford, when Leicester were bottom of the table and should have been relegated, you're not just going to say, sorry, George, you're in a bad team, so you can't be in the England squad.
I would. See you later.
That's crazy.
See you later. There's other guys that know how to win this season. You're not one of them. Well, bye-bye.
Okay. But okay, fine. We've been over this before. That's treating a team sport like an individual sport, and that's not how it works.
Well, then in that case, more key players shouldn't exist.
Well, okay.
So, yeah, I wouldn't have had them. It's a difficult one. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. If I was you, as an England fan, because I'm not an England fan, I would probably look back at the Six Nations and be more concerned about the Six Nations than I would be about this.
Yeah, I'm not particularly concerned about this, although I am disappointed that it went so badly wrong. It's funny because the Barbars played with more structure than England for a lot of the game. And England just looked poor. Just looked not great around the ruck, not looking after their own ball, trying things that weren't on at the wrong time. Like there's two intercept tries, the Olivon and the Penaud intercept try. One in Barbar's 22, one in England's 22. And just not getting the best out of the players. Against, admittedly, it's a very talented Barbar's side with a lot of French internationals, with the French coaches there as well. So it's not quite the normal Barbars team.
Agree,
it's like a
that.
Barbars plus team.
Yeah,
they've probably got more. They've probably got more cohesion than the England team.
Well, there's something to be said. Again, we'll talk about it on the other pod, but a load of beers together is one great way to get some cohesion as a group.
Just on to that game. If it's an audition for the England shirt, which it may well be, I think it might also be an audition for the French shirt.
That's precisely what it is for the French shirt. So like there's guys who are not first choice guys who are pushing for their spot.
How much would you have loved to have seen Max Spring training against Ealing? Apparently he tore it up. By the way, the French back row is pretty meaty, isn't it? Olivon coming back into that French back row is pretty meaty. Good God.
Yeah, he's some specimen.
He is. He's South African-esque. He's some special. I mean, who's got the most impressive back rows? Is it France or is it
South Africa? Just being pure numbers.
But we're not talking about forming up a battalion of men to storm a castle.
Yeah,
you just need three of them.
It'd be France and South Africa and then probably Wales. Well, specifically open side.
Yeah, Wales have got some good open side. England don't do too bad at open side, though, do they?
No, we're okay.
And McAloo as well. McAloo was running wild.
It was fun. He did run wild.
It was fun. I mean, I've never known. I've very rarely heard George Cruz speak. He might be now, just on the strength of the bits I've heard of him this week, and you know, with obviously his that was his final game of rugby at the age of 32. He and Courtney Law, he might be if I'd have known more about George Cruz earlier, he would have been, for the last few years, my favourite player along with Courtney Laws. They are both incredibly interesting men.
Yeah.
As well as ferocious players.
What's going on with George Cruz? I know he's retiring, right? But I think he's one of the few players that could just walk into any club. Someone would make salary cap room for him.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he mustn't want to play.
He doesn't want to play. He wants to do something else. He even talks about that. That's what I found so interesting. He was talking about... you know, life's about memories, and life's about doing interesting things and challenging yourself. And I want to go make some other memories. He's actually kind of like completed it, mate. Done rugby, completed it. I'm not interested anymore.
I want
to go do something else. That's he seems to want to find things that challenge him. And the second he's like, I'm a bit bored of this rugby thing, so I'm going to go and do something else.
I hope he goes on to his local club and dominates level six somewhere, London Southwest level six or.
I mean, North Dorset Seven
is an England. So he's gone. He's running his CBD well-being fitness supplement company full time. Him and Dom Day. So that I think is what he's going to do.
It is, yeah.
Because he's making more than enough money from that that he doesn't need to play rugby. But I can't help but think another 18 months. Just get contract with one club for 1 year. Just stay in good shape.
15 months.
15 months, not long, and have a crack at the World Cup.
Yeah,
Tim, to your point before about memories, if he's going to make millions from his CBD business, he can do that for the next 50 years.
Yeah,
he will only get one more crack at winning a World Cup.
Yeah,
yeah. So you're looking at it from the World Cup point of view, right? I'm looking at it from like a money point of view. So yeah, let's just say full time rugby, he's sick of it. He doesn't want to go and lift weights every single day. The sharp end of rugby, I'm sure, can get. You know, just get monotonous after a while. Just knowing that you've got to raise the intensity again and again and again. And then after the intensity of Saracens and winning the European title, you've got to go to South Africa and raise it even more for England. I can see why it burns you out. I really can. But he could say, look, give me X amount. I'll stay in good shape. You'll see me around 2 days a week and I'll play when the England boys are away and I'll be ready
I'll play Champions Cup and Six Nations.
Yeah. Yeah, and pay me half the amount and I'll be doing my CBD business down the road. I'm sure
there's definitely a deal to be done there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I'd have him in the England squad in a heartbeat.
Yeah, he probably still would.
Is Launchbury fit? Could he be named tomorrow? Is he available? Because he wasn't in the squad, was he?
He was resting, I think.
So hopefully he'll get named tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't know about him. I'll just find out.
I would love to see Itoje, Hill, Laws, Cruz, and Launchbury as that. I mean, that's more like it.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
That's more like it.
Laws on
that is very handy. Laws and on... then you could pick if you have that, you can pick one of the young lads. So you could pick Chesham
or Martin,
Martin or Hill. Pick one of those guys to come and learn from the best.
And I would if presuming Alex Donbrandt's now out, I would. Recall Billy Vunipola.
Do you know the Don Brandt situation? What's happened to him?
He's having a scan, so it's something with his knee. So I suggest that's not good. But then who? But you see, everyone's calling for Alfie Barbary, and they won't be happy if Billy Vunipola comes in and Barbary's out. There'll be loads of people moaning about that.
I have no idea. What would I do? I don't know. I need to see them both up front. I mean, once he's been to a Premiership final. There again, he's been to a Premiership final, been hit in the head in consecutive weeks too. So, how on did he get hit in the head?
The area that concerns me, Phil, I don't know what you think, is basically like the three quarters, the centres and wings. I don't like how unsure I would be of who to pick. Because, like, obviously, yeah. Steward, Malins are kind of the only back three players that are sort of, you go, yeah, totally happy with that, I haven't got a problem.
I'm not sure Malins is that nailed on, you know. I think his form's been great for Saracens, but I don't think he was that good for England. And he's maybe a little bit lightweight when you get up to the top, and the top level.
Eddie loves Noel.
Yeah.
Everyone loves Noel, to be fair.
Yeah, I
but
love
Noel's injury record is not great.
He hasn't played a lot, but set with Slade out, just centres just concern me, because I think Atkinson played him. Unfortunately, love the man, friend of the pod, stand in for Phil when Phil's not about. I think he won't be on the plane to Australia.
I disagree with him. I think Eddie likes him. I think Eddie is very intrigued by Atkinson, which is why he keeps on coming back. I think there is a plan for him.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, So here, do you want to know the rumour that I've heard about how Eddie wants to square the circle of not having Manu?
What, the Stuart Barnes article, or is this different from that?
No, this is... It's to have Freeman at 13. Because Freeman...
Oh, yeah, you said that last week.
And actually, we're seeing Freeman in an English shirt today. Do you know who he reminds me of? Pernod. The English Pernod.
I can see that. I can see the Pernod link.
I would have him, definitely. He looks every inch international.
But he's never played 13, has he?
No. But as an international player.
He
I don't know about 13.
Like
13 doesn't strike me as the greatest idea. But I think, if you say that Malins and Stewart are, two-thirds of your back three, I would definitely...
Oh, well, I'm not saying Malins to start. I'm just saying people that are sort of nailed on. I think England's wing positions, we've got a lot of talented players, but no one that you go, they're definitely in. And they're
Joe Coughlin's
singer.
Well, no. I think Johnny May is... He
was good as well. He was decent, I thought.
Yeah, he had a few nice touches.
I know that really annoyed people that Johnny May was picked as well. I wasn't bothered about that. He's class, and I don't mind him playing against the Barbarians, and he looked quite good. So.
Yeah, he's not had a huge amount of game time because of injuries. It's good to see him back.
Yeah.
So I think there's a few. I think with no Manu and no Slade, the back line. Pick your nine, and I'd be tempted to go Wigglesworth, but whoever you want at nine. Then it'll be Marcus Smith, Faz. I think Marchant will probably play 13.
That'll be the starting 13, yeah.
I think then you'll have Noel, Johnny May, and Freddie Stewart as your back three.
Yeah,
assuming they're all fit.
I'm happy with that. It's the backup for that, I guess. Does Dingwall get on the plane? Do you bring Lazowski back in? I don't know. Centres.
Lazowski's a cool player.
There's just no depth in some positions. Tight head prop, I get worried about as well.
We're about to expire, gentlemen.
Yeah, we are. Well, okay, let's leave it there because I think this weekend we found out that you're only as good as your fly half, and when he goes down, you're only as good as your backup fly half.
Yeah. Too right. Thank you very much. Find us patreon.com/eggchasers. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. We're here every week. If you haven't already hit subscribe, please do and leave a 5-star review and let the boys play.
Yeah, boys play.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.